Moncrief on News Talk.
Now, there are a number of world figures for whom international arrest warrants have been issued. But is it ever likely that the likes of Putin or Netanyahu might see the inside of a courtroom? Is the idea of international justice growing or becoming weaker? Steve Crenshaw is the author of Prosecuting the Powerful, War Crimes and the Battle for Justice. Good afternoon, Steve.
Good afternoon to you.
One gets the impression that there's a push back against the very concept of international justice at the moment.
There certainly is, isn't there? I mean, we have the arrival of Donald Trump in the White House. I mean, there were things before that, to be fair, but his arrival, we have now, if you like, the king of impunity has arrived in the White House. He hates justice for himself. He hates the idea of any justice for his supporters and likewise for his political friends abroad. So he really hates the International Criminal Court in The Hague and everything it stands for. But we have seen a number of changes moving forward. So I think we are at a very, very interesting dilemma moment, if you like, is that on the one hand, things have moved forward in huge, many different ways, which we can talk about also. And at the same time, you've got the president of the most powerful country in the world who just loathes justice and everything it stands for, which is sad. And I think needs to be very, very strongly confronted by other governments, especially in Europe.
Do you think that's likely to happen?
Well, I have to say, Ireland, and I'm not saying this because I'm on an Irish program, but the Irish government, I'm glad, has spoken a bit more than others. So it's actually quite a small number of European governments. Ireland and Spain, to some extent Norway and a couple of others, have spoken of their disquiet at the kind of Trumpian approach to justice. I think that those voices will need to be much more of them. And much stronger, to be honest. So we're hearing pretty loud noises for obvious reasons on things like tariffs, which, you know, governments are worried of the implications of that and are facing up to Trump to some extent. I think the danger is that they see accountability and justice issues as being something which can somehow be set to one side and that they don't need to, you know, doesn't bother them indirectly. I, and I think many others, would argue that actually holding people to account for the worst possible war crimes in the hope that that can deter in the future, as well as bringing closures for survivors, that's incredibly important to all of us. And to have a man who simply thinks he can trample justice and try to throttle the court, which is kind of what he's trying to do at the moment, is simply not acceptable.
Is there evidence of that, though, Steve, where that the actions of the International Criminal Court or its very existence has acted as some sort of brake against people committing crimes?
I mean, you're quite right to ask the question, because we look around us at the moment and say, well, like, whoa, we're in the middle of this incredible darkness. So since it was created 20 years ago, you know, we've had the Syria war with all these completely unished war crimes. We had Putin's invasion of Ukraine and so many war crimes committed there. What's happening in Gaza at the moment, where tens of thousands have been killed as part of the Israeli assault. And of course, the war crimes that began this particular last stage with 7th of October, the crimes of Hamas. So you're quite right. There's a lot of darkness around. But I think that there have been growing possibilities of holding the most powerful people to account. If we compare it back to Nuremberg, which was, you know, quite controversial in some respects at the time. So Winston Churchill, for example, didn't want prosecutions to happen at all. He thought it was much easier just to put some Nazis up against the wall and shoot them. He was deeply unconvinced until very late on. It happened, and I think people are proud of what happened then. We then had decades of nothing happening. But then, you know, for example, you had, you know, Milosevic was held to account, the Serb leader and others in the Bosnian War, Rwanda, and the International Criminal Court. Also, we've had a number of key cases happening there. I'm not saying it has stopped things, because it clearly hasn't, but I think that we can think of it as one of the tools of helping to create a kind of stability for the future. And if you flip it, perhaps as importantly, if you don't have any justice and you have that burning, if people have a burning resentment, the sense that an injustice has been done and that there has been no comeback for it, and often that no truth has been told, there's been no official acknowledgement, which is another thing that a court can do. They feel nothing has been done about this, And the burning resentment that comes from that often then spills out into more wars and more violence, often going well beyond the borders of the original conflict zone. So it definitely doesn't solve all the problems all with one stroke, but does it make a contribution? I think absolutely yes.
When the ICC was set up, why didn't the United States sign up for it?
It's interesting, isn't it? The United States is, we think of it as such a kind of voice for justice in some ways, and it speaks out for, you know, about the bad things happening elsewhere. But what we've seen as a pattern, and it's not just under Donald Trump, as you say, way back, it was Clinton originally, who was pretty iffy about joining the court. He eventually signed on, but the Bush administration came in shortly afterwards, and they, as they put it, unsigned the treaty, in other words, pulled back from the court. And there's been a kind of pattern of like, we can judge others, but nobody should judge us. And I think that quite apart from the kind of the weird immorality of that, and indeed the illegality, because rule of law is supposed to apply to everybody, I think there's also a failure to understand that those kind of rules end up backfiring on you. And perhaps the clearest example of that was during the war on terror, where, you know, the horrific, the very obviously horrific crimes of Al-Qaeda and, you know, flying planes into buildings, murdering large numbers of people, terrible things were happening. And the United States, to some extent my own country, the UK also, but certainly the United States under Bush, felt that all the rules could now be torn up. And for example, that torture was absolutely fine and we can just go ahead with torture, quote unquote, in order to keep us all safe. And in fact, of course, what happened, this tearing up of the rules actually acted as a kind of encouragement to the world was a more unstable place, not a less unstable place, as a result of the torture and the war on terror abuses. But I think that successive US governments have had difficulty in accepting that. Even the Genocide Convention, for example, which was agreed in 1948, against huge odds, there was a very brilliant and determined Polish Jew called Raphael Lemkin who pushed it through. There was such resistance from governments, but they eventually said yes to it. But the US government didn't ratify the Genocide Convention for 40 years. And again, the reason for that was, yeah, we're happy to condemn somebody else's genocide, for example, the Nazi genocide or elsewhere. But what if they turn around and accuse us for the various crimes that we've committed? And the proper answer to that, of course, is either A, don't commit the crimes in the first place, that's the simplest prescription, or the follow-up to that, which is very relevant for the ICC, is if crimes have happened, then those most responsible need themselves to be investigated and prosecuted. And at that point, the ICC doesn't get involved at all. But the Washington has repeatedly, and now especially under Trump, says, we make the rules and we will decide on everything. And he in his first term, he was even eager to let convicted US war criminals, those who'd been convicted of war crimes from the US forces, had been convicted, and he pardoned them. And the senior US military was very unhappy and expressed its unhappiness. But he has this sense that somehow impunity is a good thing, in a way that I guess it's difficult for a lot of us to get our heads around. But that's the mindset, is we decide about others, but we don't let others decide about us, even if it's an independent court with independent judges and all of that.
Mm. So the countries that have signed up to the ICC, do they need some other structure in place? By which I mean, if tomorrow Vladimir Putin decided to land in Dublin Airport, would we arrest him? Probably not. Probably most of the population would say, let's not arrest him. We don't need, we already have Russian, dodgy Russian ships sailing through our waters as it is. We'd need some sort of guarantee or protection from the rest of the community, if you see what I mean.
That's really interesting you say that. And it's interesting what your speculation is of how people would react. And I have no way of judging that. I would hope that people wouldn't react like that. I would hope they would think, whoa, this guy has committed so many crimes. How proud can we be? Because he had to touch down at Shannon and we can therefore fetch him off the plane, that we are the country which is able to do what seemed impossible, but to bring this person to account. But to answer your, even leaving aside what popular opinion might be, I would feel reasonably confident, given what the Irish government has repeatedly said, and successive governments have talked about the importance of justice, I would like to think that he absolutely would be arrested, same as he would be arrested if he landed in London, in Berlin, or in Paris, or elsewhere. The bigger question, which at the moment is there, I think Putin, most of those governments would go like, okay, you've walked here and we have an obligation to arrest you. There's no discussion of the matter. The trickier one at the moment is for Benjamin Netanyahu, who, of course, has continued to travel to the United States, including after the issuing of arrest warrants, despite, you know, pretty well-documented series of different war crimes, starvation, killing of civilians, targeting of infrastructure, all sorts of things which are absolutely against the rule of law completely, and tens of thousands dead. He's been to America both under Biden, he was there, and was received with standing ovations in Congress, let alone with Trump now, who can rolled out the red carpet for him. But even in Europe, we've seen that a number of governments have sounded a bit iffy, saying, well, if he came, we're not quite sure whether we would arrest him or not. Hungary, which is the most authoritarian, of course, of the European countries, and is kind of a, if you like, a Putinist country within Europe, has made it clear that they would not arrest Netanyahu, Viktor Orban, the prime minister there. But Paris and Berlin, London has kept quiet on it actually at the moment. And Dublin, I think, is more sympathetic. Dublin has repeatedly, the Irish government has repeatedly made clear, but is in a minority on this, that crimes, whoever they are committed by, need to be addressed. In other words, that what happened with Putin's crimes needs to be addressed, Netanyahu's crimes need to be addressed, and of course the crimes of Hamas. And that, you would think that should be a really, really simple lesson that everybody could sign up for. And in principle, people do sign up for it, but in practice, they always want to say, yeah, but actually my friend should be excluded from that. And I think that's a dangerous starting point for sure.
Yeah. Steve, thank you so much for speaking with us today. That was Steve Crawshaw there. Apologies for getting your surname wrong the first time. Author of Prosecuting the Powerful, War Crimes and the Battle for Justice.
Moncrief. Weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.